Hello, friends. Welcome to the Logistics of Logistics podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today. On the Logistics of Logistics, I talk to experts in logistics and transportation, warehousing, fulfillment, supply chain, and of course, technology. And during these interviews, I'm always the one asking the dumb questions. I ask the dumb questions so you don't have to.
Today's topic is taming the supply chain beast, tech solutions for smoother operations with my friend Kendra Phillips. Kendra is the VP of Global Transportation Management, leading the managed transportation and brokerage divisions of Ryder System, a Fortune 500 transportation and logistics company. To tame the supply chain beast, shippers need a transportation partner who has the tech to make operations nice and smooth. Ryder is that kind of partner. To learn more about what Kendra and her team at Ryder are up to, please take a listen. How's it going, Kendra?
It's going really well. Thanks, Joe. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you again. Kendra, please introduce yourself and your company where you're calling from today.
Absolutely. My name is Kendra Phillips. I am the VP of Managed Transportation and Brokerage at Ryder System, and I'm calling from warm, sunny Miami, Florida.
Oh, very nice. Oh, here you guys got spring breakers, though, so maybe that makes it a little harder.
We do. It's all over the news. I have to say, though, not where I live. Where I live exactly. Is status quo.
Yeah. So, Kendra, you're in charge of, you said, two things. What were the two things again?
Transportation management and brokerage.
So please explain.
Absolutely. Ryder actually has a brokerage division. We recently acquired Cardinal Logistics. When we acquired Cardinal, we got their dedicated operations and we got their brokerage arm. I already had a brokerage arm under me. So overnight, we doubled the size of our brokerage, which is very exciting for us. Prior, we were a more mid-sized broker. Now I think you could consider us a large broker in the space. So we're very excited about that offering and some of the capabilities it adds to our toolkit. In addition, we have our transportation management offering. So that's really our offering where we can take over a customer's entire transportation network. We'll do everything from end to end. Network design and management, procurement, execution, carrier management. We'll deal with all the exceptions. Freight bill audit and payment, and we'll do the analytics, which I think is the most important part. And as far as the analytics, there's a lot we can do around continuous improvement, benchmarking, I can't say that properly, and also bringing a lot of intelligence to our supply chain partners in ways they can drive deeper efficiency within their networks.
Very nice. Very nice. I've said before we record, we were talking about your acquisition, and one of the things I always say when we talk about freight brokerages, there's 27,000, 28,000. And we tend to say, who's the biggest? Who's that top 1,200, top 1,500, which you guys are. But what I think gets missed sometimes is there's sometimes carriers, and you guys started, I think, as a carrier, that have thousands of trucks. And then somebody says, well, you have a small freight brokerage. That's okay. They get the business. I'm going to say you understand the business a little differently because of your heritage and because there are trucks in your sister divisions.
I agree with you. I think same with the transportation management offering as well. We don't have assets there either, but having assets in other parts of our business really does enable you to have a different perspective, right? We all know in supply chains and transportation, things don't always go according to plan. And it's not just knowing that, it's understanding how to properly react and what information you need to handle that exception or handle that disruption. And when you have that asset side as another piece of your business, you're really more ready for what could go wrong, how it goes wrong, and how you need to respond when that happens. You also understand and have, I think, a better ability to reach out to help others with some of the challenges they might face. A lot of small trucking companies can't afford or didn't used to have all the technology you need to really be a competitor today. So one of the things we do is we look to make sure we can interact with companies where they are, meaning we have lots of different ways to technologically integrate with carriers to get all their latest data, their tracking information, their check-in, check-outs, their documents. We try to make it easy on them so that we are an easy partner for them to work with and we can drive more value for that carrier and ultimately our shipper. And I do think to your point, that really comes from understanding the business from a different view and understanding what it takes to be successful.
Yep. And this is no shade to any brokers who have a technology DNA. I think all of them do at this 1 minute, but there's that old fashioned technology, which is the truck. And those are wildly expensive. And I always say companies like Ryder, when somebody says, I can't get a truck, you're like, well, I know these guys down the hall and they have a couple thousand of them. So, probably more than that with you guys. Anyway, I met you at Manifest and I interviewed you at Manifest, but it did not come out right. And I would love to blame the technology, but it was probably me. So here we go again.
We're doing it again.
But talk for a minute about Manifest, what you saw there. What didn't you see there? It was 4,500 people this year and Ryder had, I don't know, half those people, it seemed. You guys were well represented there.
No, actually, it was my first year at Manifest. So it was an amazing experience for me. My understanding is I think it was double the size of last year. But it was a very impressive event where you got to really meet or ignite a lot of your relationship with other experts and other players in the industry. The brain trust in those rooms was through the roof. It was a great opportunity to see folks, understand what everyone's up to, and then probably more importantly, to get to see the latest tech that's out there. There was a lot of really interesting companies presenting what they were doing, what they're building, what they're working on. And it's a great opportunity to expand your horizon of what's available to you as a player in the logistics industry.
Yep. Yep. And I know we talked, even separate from the interview, we were talking about some of the things we saw. And it seems like a lot of people were talking about AI. And I remember talking to you for a long time about this idea of you have to have your data right first. So I think we're really in a place of AI readiness, because if you don't get your data right, I've said it before on my podcast, I used to say garbage in, garbage out. You don't hear that very much, but I feel like with AI, it's like garbage in and like garbage squares. Like, because if you don't have your data right, what is that AI doing for you?
I agree. And I think AI readiness is a really good term for it. Everyone's ready to tackle the latest challenge with AI. But as we all saw during COVID, I think one of the biggest challenges in supply chain or in logistics is you're trying to bring together all of the players in the supply chain to have one consistent view or one consistent set of data as towards what's happening. And that is very difficult when you are reaching across as many players as you do in logistics, right? You have a supplier who might be sitting in Asia. You have the ground transportation company. You've got the dray company. You've got the ocean carrier. You've got the dray company in the US. You've got the transportation company in the US. You've got a warehouse provider. You have another transportation company. You've got the actual shipper and the consignee. You're trying to bring all these folks together and create one set of understanding of what's happening across all those companies, all those systems, and all that data. It's really challenging. In fact, it's probably close to impossible. So it's up to each of us, and especially folks like Ryder who are 3PLs or 4PLs, to ensure that we have that right data foundation in place. And I think that hasn't always been a focus for most companies. I think that's really something that's come out of the last few years. And that's where having a really strong data canonical or data model that you're dependent on that allows you to normalize your data across your warehouse, across your transportation, right? Across your different service offerings, your different industries, potentially different acquisitions is very important and sets the stage then for success with AI. But if you don't have that in the place in the first place, to your point, it's going to be garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. And before we hit record, I was talking with you and Rebecca from your marketing team, and we were talking about potential titles. We have this cool title, Taming the Supply Chain Beast, and that was AI generated. But yeah, what I've noticed with AI, and that's real simple, picking the wrong title doesn't screw anybody up. But if you use AI, and I think a lot of marketers are using it, we all say the same thing. It's really good. But you always have to edit it. Ryder can't go to some of those Fortune 5,000 customers and say, yeah, this is pretty good. And we used AI and yeah, it seems directionally correct. And who knows, maybe it's good. Maybe it's not.
Directionally correct is not allowed. Definitely not.
It has to be right. So we can't, there's no editing. Once you say, oh, here's what the system spit out, we'll do this. and maybe you cost yourself a lot of money or make some bad decisions because the AI wasn't quite ready for prime time, or the data is not quite ready for prime time. It's not just your data, it's everybody's data.
No, I agree. I think there's places of opportunities. I had a, this isn't around logistics, but I had an issue with an Amazon delivery, right, to my house. And it was a really unique issue. And when I tried to return it, they wouldn't let me online. And so I did the AI chat to return it. And I thought, oh, this will never understand. It's a unique scenario. This is going to be a pain. And instead it resolved my issue in under 2 minutes and got me a full return and there handled it. I was honestly blown away with the efficiency, considering that I think it was an abnormal situation I was in. And it really caused me to say, okay, that's a great example of where we can apply AI, even today in logistics, right? The number of folks who are calling or emailing their 3PLs because they want to make a change, or they want to change an appointment time or update this, or want to get an update on an order or a load, right? I think there's places where it would be, it's so easy to put it into our systems today. And you have that foundation already in place. You've got that data already available. Let's leverage AI. I think there's other places when you try to get more sophisticated that we're going to have to really ensure we have our ducks in the row so that we aren't making poor decisions through AI. And it's up to, you know, us as leaders in the industry to differentiate what we're ready for and what we're not yet.
You get cautiously optimistic about these new technologies. So tell us a little bit about you, Kendra. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Some career highlights before you joined the juggernaut that is Ryder.
Oh, that's funny. I've been a Ryder a long time, but I grew up in Orlando, Florida. So I'm a Floridian. And I went to Vanderbilt University for undergrad. I did chemical engineering and math. I am as left-brained as you get, I think we could say. And then I went and actually worked at Deloitte Consulting for a few years, which was, I would say, a really phenomenal way to start your career in your 20s. Go and see a bunch of industries. Yeah, you get to really learn, really get thrown into the deep end and experience corporate America in a unique purview. So that was amazing. And then I went back and got my MBA. I went to Kellogg at Northwestern, got my MBA. And then from there, I joined Ryder, I think it was 18 years ago now. I grew up in logistics at Ryder. I did take a small detour a couple of years ago. I left Ryder and went to Aurora, the autonomous trucking company. And that was an amazing experience for me to really sit in Silicon Valley and get to see AV Trucks, very impressive company, love what they're doing. I think they're going to be immensely successful. But then I got the opportunity, Ryder came reaching out and asked if I would come back and join and run the transportation management and brokerage org. And I couldn't say no. I'm back at Ryder and I'm thrilled to be back and very happy to be here.
So you obviously had options and you picked Ryder twice. Why is that?
I think when I was coming out of grad school, maybe not as sophisticated of a decision, but right now in my career, I couldn't imagine being at another place. Ryder is in a really unique moment. We have the strongest leadership team that I think I could ever ask to perform under. Our C-suite is absolutely incredible. They have a very clear vision of where they are taking this company. They have very clear goals and objectives. The entire company is rowing in the exact same direction, which I think is more unique than we often realize. And we are achieving those goals year after year, quarter after quarter. And we're doing it in some really unique ways, right? We have Karen Jones, who sits in our C-suite, is our chief product officer and chief marketing officer. She's brought an entire different view of how tech does fit into the supply chain and into logistics, how Ryder should be investing in that technology. She has us doing things that in the past would have probably been a little bit out of our comfort zone. And it's made us a better company, along with the entire leadership team and their really, like I said, their vision and their strategic objectives. So for where I am at the maturity level in my career, to be able to sit right under that C-suite and learn from them and see the direction Ryder's taking the company and see how that supports our customers and really enables us to be successful on behalf of our customers, I couldn't give up that opportunity. I do think it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to get to work for a company at this stage of maturity and that level of leadership. So I'm thrilled. I just couldn't be happier to be here right now.
I said this to you when we were at Manifest. I'm in the Detroit area and I spent a lot of my career in automotive, and I told you, and I've said this to many Ryder people, I always thought Ryder was based in Detroit until last year.
Yeah, because
you guys were
there.
Omnipresent in automotive. There's only two companies that seem to have all of the business in automotive. Ryder's one of them. And so when you guys, oh, we're in Miami, I was like, oh, I felt like you ripped us off. Like you should be up here in the cold with us. But that, I think that was a big, I know it's still a big chunk of your business, but you guys have grown and diversified across so many industries now. I think you guys used to be, I think a lot of people up here would say, isn't it just an automotive company? Not anymore.
No, it's true. And we do just, we've always had a diverse base of services with warehousing, transportation management, dedicated. We have our whole truck leasing and rental side, maintenance side of the house. But recently, again, as part of that strategic vision, Ryder's made some really specific acquisitions in a few different areas to broaden and strengthen those services that we already had. So we're more diverse and have more to offer than I think folks always realize.
Yes, yes, yes. So I want to talk to you about, I have, I think, 3 points that I want to talk to you about the technology. But before we get, which, by the way, if you're going to tame that supply chain beast, a lot of times that's with tech.
It's with tech.
But before we get into that, you guys put out a monthly market report, you and FreightWaves, and I've talked about it before on my podcast, and I've posted it within the logistics of logistics recently, but I think that was the February report. We haven't talked about the March report. Please tell us the good news, Kendra.
I will say the numbers out there are looking better and better. So if you do look at the stats, for example, in January, if I get this right, I think spot rates were down 11% year over year and contract was down 9% year over year. In February, still down, but down less. So right in February, spot was down 4% year over year. So that's a huge improvement over the 11%. Right. And contract was down 8% year over year. So we are starting to see that uptick. I think the March numbers are going to be even more positive. We're seeing a lot of positive trends in the industry. Freight volumes are maintaining. They honestly have been. I know there's been a lot of talk of the volumes being down, but I don't think that's been the case. Even last year, we saw really strong freight volumes. The challenge is still the capacity out in the market. So we did see, unfortunately, a fair amount of companies go out of business in January. So that number was higher in January than it had been over the past few months. February was back down. March typically is a lower month. So we do need that supply and demand, or the freight and the carrier capacity, to still normalize. And we expect that to happen, or the market's looking at that to happen more in Q3, Q4 timeline. And then I think you'll start to see, hopefully, a turnaround in the market, call it Q4, Q1 next year. But I will say, really positive trends out there, right? We have a ways to go still as an industry, but February was a good month. I think March is starting to look like a really strong month as well. And I think hopefully we can all breathe a sigh of relief here soon.
Yeah, it seemed like during COVID, we had a lot of companies grew during COVID. And both freight brokerages and trucking companies. And
yes,
that, I think, means we kept older trucks in service for longer. And we got that big COVID boost. The rates were very high. A lot of people got checks from the government. And that now has to work its way out. Just before we hit record, I was saying my friend Kevin Hill over at Brush Pass Research said that year over year, we have 9% fewer freight brokerages. Clearly, those are probably the lower end of the business, but we need some of these armies to leave the field. We need some of those trucks that are getting old to leave to get this to be healthy again.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time. I think you're hitting on a few different points, and I'll take a step back. One is what we're seeing across shipper networks in general over the past few years, and I do think it was driven by COVID and also by tech, is that brokerage freight is a larger percentage of their freight than it would have been, call it 8 to 10 years ago. What does that mean? Brokers by nature are able to get freight to smaller carriers, right? So to your point, we need the market to right size. We need some of that carrier capacity to leave. Traditionally in market downturns, that would have happened pretty quickly. Why? Because those carriers would have no longer had access to freight. But now through that deeper broker usage and broker network, those carriers are still here, because they're still able to access freight. And I'm talking generally, right? To the points you were making, some carriers have left. But your point is interesting. Brokers are starting to leave, right? So the brokers who have run out of cash, who maybe invested very heavily in tech and potentially overspent during the upturn, are struggling now. And so they're leaving. So we do need that market to right size. We do need the brokerage volume to right size. We do need those carriers to right size. And I hate to say that. It's unfortunate, right? Because it does mean companies are going out of business and none of us ever want that. But we do need that supply-demand curve that we all learned about in school to normalize. And that's what we're really looking for. And again, I think we're, and the more freight picks up, the easier all that gets. That's the other positive sign, right? So we are seeing a lot of positivity in the market. And I think we're starting to see that normalization. I don't want to say begin, it's probably too early for begin, but we're starting to see some little upticks or some indications that things will get better.
And I'm not just saying this to be nice, but this is very true, is we now have a lot of data. The report you guys do with FreightWaves every month, that's not just back of the napkin. There's economists who work on that. And I know Wall Street and economists are looking at that to make decisions. We all have access to that. So if somebody wants to get that, I'll put a link to that report in the show notes. But you can also find it on Ryder's website. We all can make better decisions as a result of this.
Yeah, to your point, what we're trying to do is really partner with FreightWaves to get all that economic data, all the data that's out there, and then translate it into what it means for the rest of us who might not be so economically astute. And I think the report does a really good balance of that. So thank you for putting that out there for folks to see.
I know Anthony over there. He's been in the pod. I'll have to call him and get him back on. So anyway, I want to talk about taming the supply chain beast with tech solutions. So when customers are looking to tame that supply chain beast and they're looking for those technologies, what should they be looking at right now?
But we talked about at the beginning. I think it's an interesting and somewhat difficult time when it comes to tech right now. There's the good and the bad. The good is there's so much out there, right? We were talking about that with Manifest. There's amazing tech being built. There's a lot of focus on the supply chain and logistics industry. There's a lot of investment, even still going into that, which is wonderful for all of us. The hard part is there's so much out there. So how do you know what really could impact your network or make a difference for your network? I even struggle, right? I spend all day in this. I struggle sometimes telling one provider apart from another, what's the differentiated value? How would, you know, one tech help my business over another tech? I think it's a challenging time from that perspective. So when I look to give advice, there's a few things I focus on. One is if you're a shipper out there looking to figure out where to invest, first thing, make sure you have your foundation in place. Before you're going and getting the new tech, make sure your core is where it needs to be. What do I mean by that? If it's your ERP or TMS or WMS, whatever you use in your area of the business or your focus area, make sure that is an up-to-date-ish technology, not something that's, you know, 20 years old that you guys have been running for many years. Make sure it's able to support the different business segments or business needs that you have across your business. I think that is more important today than ever. Make sure that you have that data canonical that we were talking about earlier when we were talking about AI. You have to know what your normalized data set looks like for your business. And that has to be applicable, again, across the segments in your company. If you've made acquisitions, bringing those in, you have to have that data canonical, that normalized data in place. And then once you've got that foundation down, once that's where you need it, then you can start to go look at what else is out there and how does it add value. And when you do that, what you're looking for is bolt-on tech that you're going to bolt onto that foundational tech that you already have. So what's important, right? It has to be API forward. That's extremely important. It has to have very strong data analytics. I don't care what the tech is. It's got to have strong data analytics and insights that you can gather from it. An area I think people tend to overlook is the UI and the UX. How easy to use and easy to understand is that technology? Today, there is some tech out there that is so, you hand it to someone and they can figure out what to do with it without any training. And then there's other tech out there where you still have to click 30 pages to find what you're looking for, right? The value to your company, if you're able to find that tech that is just intuitive and easy to use, is so high. So it's worth, that is worth something. And I think in the past, we've always looked at that as nice to have.
Yep. Let me break in for just a sec. So you mentioned UI, UX, that's user interface, user experience. That's when the person's using the technology, it's that easy interface that you spoke of, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you mentioned AI, which is API, which is, that means how I can connect other technologies and other systems, right? Easily. Please explain why you need to be AI, API forward.
Oh, yes. So it's an interesting question. I get a lot, actually, that one. So many folks in our industry are still EDI. So I hear a lot of times it doesn't matter. Everybody's still EDI based. It's okay that the tech is just EDI capable. I really disagree with that, because if it's modern tech, it is going to have APIs. And that's going to be its connectivity methodology. So I think how API forward technology is just says a lot about the state of the tech and the way the people who have designed it are thinking. And I do believe you need to be able to handle EDI, because everyone is heavily still EDI in our industry. But we will be moving, the industry as a whole will be moving away from EDI and towards API, and probably faster than a lot of us realize. So if you're looking at new tech, to me, that's a must have.
Yep. Yep. And one of the things we talked about this before we hit record, we're seeing again that cybersecurity and freight fraud is still a problem. And I keep thinking you have to have, we mentioned the foundational piece, that has to be part of it. Nobody wants to work with a partner who potentially puts them at risk.
It's true. And again, it's another difficult thing in the transportation logistics space, right? Because we are dependent on small trucking companies who just don't always have those resources, right? Or to your point, right, there's large number of brokers who are out there or other things. I think that is a benefit. If you're a shipper out there and you're looking at outsourcing, that is a benefit of going to a larger 3PL or 4PL such as Ryder. Our cybersecurity team is very, very engaged, very hands-on, integral to what we do. And there have been times where some of our carrier partners they've had breaches, right? Someone's breached them. And we are able to react in a heartbeat. And we are able to protect Ryder and protect our customers. But that's because we've invested significantly. We're set up for that. And that is a peace of mind for our shipper partners out there. And unfortunately, it's just the world we live in today, where we know at some point most companies are going to get hacked or breached, and we've got to have the plans ready for that and be able to respond accordingly.
So when companies come to Ryder and they say they have that supply chain beast, I imagine there's lots of things that they feel are wrong. And they come to you, what kind of things are they asking for? What are you doing for them? How do you get them straightened out?
I would say it's very interesting. We focus on a few different industry segments. And the beauty of having our breadth of services, but then the industry segmentation, is that we do really become experts in what each industry needs and the uniqueness of that industry. And so when they come to us, it's usually a little different based on that industry, right? You started up front talking about automotive. That hasn't changed. The need is still just in time, right? What is the just in time delivery to the plant? The challenge now is, and it's not now, it's been for a while, but is where is the product coming from? What's the supplier base? And how do we get that product ready for just in time? And then with that, it's that visibility into, again, data and just visibility into what's happening with those suppliers. Do they have that product ready? Where is that product? How do we order it and get it sequenced properly? So in automotive, it's been the same story. I think it will continue to be the same story. If you look at more of CPG, we get into a little different issue there, or different challenges. For them, there's a lot of PO fulfillment services we provide, which is really the ability for their suppliers to come in and fulfill our customers' POs. And then we provide the transportation for that. So we're able to have their suppliers fill the PO. We know that the product's ready. We can go pick it up and bring it into our CPG customer's facility. That transparency, that connectivity across their supplier, us as the 3PL transportation provider, and their warehouse facility is a significant value for them and adds a lot. It's a huge problem we take off their plate. Again, with that comes that visibility and that data, right? Another thing we've talked about, unfortunately, there's been not just cyber theft, but there's been physical theft, right? So if you're looking at high value goods, if you're in the CPG energy industry, maybe you're talking about alcoholic beverages, right? So if you're starting to look at high value goods and preventing that theft and ensuring that you have the right processes and procedures in place, that's certainly something companies have been coming to us for more and more. We are really strong in cross-border and Mexico operations. So we have started to see that uptick in nearshoring. And so as customers are looking for enhancing their supply chains from Mexico into the US, that's something we can easily partner with them on and bring that to them. So it depends in each industry, in each case, but it's usually around creating, I think the running theme is around connecting the various partners in the supply chain and bringing that one view and that one data set to the table to help streamline things for our customers.
Yeah. So there's one of the things we've talked about, all these different technologies. How do you, so I keep thinking there must be a new update, a new implementation going on at one of your customers every day, given the scale and the size of your customer base.
Yes, there is always something going on. And that is the neat part of this as well, right? Because we might be implementing new technology because it's a new customer, we're bringing them up on our systems, or we might actually be deploying new technology that we've built for customers. I have a customer that's been with us for 20 years. We're deploying dock scheduler and yard management systems for them right now across their entire network, right? Because again, it's helped with the theft and it's helped in streamlining. So when you ask, how does Ryder tackle something like that? I think one of the things we're really proud of is we do have a global standard for program management that we follow when we're implementing tech that we think is really important. It level sets where we need to be and helps provide that stability for our customers. We're able to adapt ourselves and our methodology and the timeline to what that customer may need. So it's very different when you're doing a rollout across 20 or 30 warehouses versus when you're doing one at one facility, right? What does that mean? What's that timeline? How do we align on that? We always bring in a certified project manager to lead the effort. And we also make sure that the operating team that will be supporting the customer is a part of that tech onboarding from the beginning. The reason that matters is it means the operating team knows how the tech should be utilized and what value it should drive. And that is more important than I think a lot of folks recognize. And then we, of course, have change management, risk mitigation, lots of communication with the customers. But in general, we're at this point, it's a place we put a lot of focus. I would say we're extremely good at having a seamless tech rollout. It's ironic. I had a customer a couple of weeks ago. We started up the business. So they were starting up a new area of their company. And he called and asked me when we were going to be done with the tech deployment. And I said, we finished last week. And he was hysterical because he's like, it can't be. I didn't have anyone complaining. He said, that doesn't make any sense. And his point was, normally when they get new tech rollout, something goes wrong and it gets escalated to his level and he's got to go put out the fire. And for us, it was seamless. Nothing got escalated to him. And he didn't even realize we had completed it. And that's a perfect scenario, right? We've done it without any.
Yes. One of the things has come up on my podcast, and I've experienced this, but I think we've gotten so much better in every business, but especially in our business, is that if you're the boss and I come to you and I say, "Son, Kendra, I would like to update this technology," and go, "Okay, Joe, show me the ROI. Show me how we're going to get that investment back." We might have to implement 80% of that to get the ROI. But the implementations used to be so painstaking that we would get to 50% and go, enough already. I got a day job. I can't keep doing this. And then at some point you say, Joe, why didn't you get the ROI that you told me you were going to get? So I think we have to, I think we've made it a lot easier to get the ROI we're supposed to get. I think we also do a better job of measuring ahead of time.
I agree with you. One thing we do now with any new technology we're implementing for us is we are very clear on what the ROI is and where it should come from. And we track that we've achieved it. And I would say if you went back again, call it 10 years, you wouldn't see us tracking if we achieved it because probably assume maybe we didn't. But now we do. And I do think what's made a huge difference there is the SaaS, the fact that things are in the cloud, right? They're SaaS products. It used to be when you went out and bought something on-prem, you then, as a large company, tried to customize it like crazy to fit your needs. And the minute you did that, you destroyed that ROI. Because with a SaaS product, you can't just customize it into infinity. you're not able to do that. And you actually have to adjust sometimes your business processes and practices to leverage the tech to the fullest extent. And I actually think that's better for all of us.
Yep. I got to tell you this, and I am the head of technology at my company, and I probably should be fired, but I bought a new laptop in December. And I remember thinking, oh, I do not want to go through this. It's just a week of hassle, not getting my emails. I'll be using my phone for everything. And it was so easy. It was like an hour. And I've thought, wow, that used to be like a week ruined when you had to switch to a new laptop. It was amazing. Same with, I bought a mobile phone in the fall. Same consternation. I was like, I would rather have this old phone than have to go through that. But it's become so much easier.
It has.
I think probably, our expectations. We bring our customer expectations from our home life, right? Those we expect that consumer tech experience at work now.
We do. Well, and I'll argue that goes back to the user experience, the UX, the UI, right? Your iPhone has been designed to be intuitive and easy to use. Everything else needs to be as well.
So there, we've talked about a lot about different technologies and why we need them, why you implement them. But when do you implement them and how do you decide what is next? Because you have all these customers, and I know you have these blue chip customers. They aren't, it's not a small thing to make, to implement. But also, you can't be 80% sure this is going to be good. How do you pick all these technologies?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. I would break it into maybe two answers, right? There's that foundational technology that we talked about earlier. We're not looking to change that often. That is not an easy change, an easy lift, because of your exact point. It has to go across so many different customers. So making that decision is on a much larger scale. I think for some of the bolt-on tech that we talked about, or Ryder invests a lot in tech startups through our venture capital arm. With those, what we really look to do is to understand, and this is the easy answer, right? Can we pilot it somewhere small first? And what we find as a 3PL is we have customers, some customers are very tech forward and they want to try something new and want to be a part of that and see how it goes. And others are like, wait and see how it works for everybody else first. 100% fine, but let's find that place to go pilot it, see the results, and if they're what we like and what we think drives value for our customers, then we'll start to deploy that elsewhere and at a larger scale. But at that point, to your point earlier, you have confidence in what it's going to do. So for us, the easy answer is finding that right pilot scenario, which we've been able to do, I think, because we do have a lot of services and a lot of industries we focus on, and we've been very successful with that.
Yeah, it's not, you know, I'm just thinking of the like Fortune 500 companies. They don't want, given the scale that they have, they can't be, oh yeah, try this. It's a great new technology. And you go, what if it doesn't work? And we're supposed to be shipping these many orders every day. And now all of a sudden you've cost, it's just, I know about the automotive assembly plants. they say it costs $1 million an hour if you shut us down.
Yeah, you can't shut them down. Absolutely not. No. And that's a perfect example. That's probably not where you're going to pilot something.
right.
We'll go pilot with a customer who's a little less sensitive and make sure it works first. And that's the beauty of the role that we get to sit in is we're not a shipper who's got one area of focus. We get to see across the spectrum. And so we get that opportunity to go figure these things out. And for us, it's been invaluable. We've worked, like I said, with a lot of startups and figuring out which ones really have a product that brings differentiated value has been extremely important. And once we know that, we can bring that to our customer base and they're not taking on that risk. So it's a really neat opportunity. It's unique, I think, in our timing in the industry as well.
Yeah, the expectations, the customer expectations at the highest level. You guys, we're called this taming the supply chain beast. And I think it's fair to say, there's a lot of companies that say, we'll get your truck. And you can call that supply chain. It certainly is supply chain, but Ryder is engaging at the supply chain level, which is more of an order to cash view of the world and
absolutely,
relationship with customers. And that's that the bar's a little higher. It's a lot higher when you have that relationship.
And what we've worked to build is what we call a port-to-door capability. So the minute it comes in via ocean or air into the U.S., all the way to the consumer's door, wherever it is consumed, your product's consumed, maybe it's a job site, maybe it's an automotive plant, we're going to be able to provide all the services in between. And that is connecting that supply chain. And that's where that unique value comes in.
Every once in a while, someone will be on my podcast and they'll say, Joe, we'll give you end-to-end visibility. And then I'll say, from where to where? From the time we pick it up at your factory to the time we deliver it to your customer. And I was like, that's 2 days. That is a handshake, not a hug. I'm order to cash. That's how the supply chain customers are looking at this world. They are looking and saying that that visibility needs to be 16 weeks or 18 weeks. It has to cross the planet, not one time zone.
That's exactly right. And that's the challenge we were talking about initially, right? Just supply chains are so complex with many different players in there, and getting that visibility across that is not something most companies can do or empowered to do via their tech, but it is the value of having some larger players as your partners.
Yep. So I want to switch gears for just a sec. We've talked a lot about all this technology and how to tame that supply chain beast. I know there's just not an easy answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Who is the sweet spot for Ryder?
Our customers tend to be the Fortune 500 companies. So that's who you tend to see us partner with across the board on the supply chain side. So if you're talking warehousing, dedicated, if you're talking transportation management or brokerage, they tend to be the Fortune 500. Our key industries, as we talked about, automotive, CPG, retail, industrial and high tech, and then health. So those are our industry segments we're very focused on. And then we have that ability to create that port to door view and connectivity across our services for those customers. So our customers tend to be bigger, more sophisticated companies who really do need that partner who can bring to them that variety of services and that technology to support those services.
So I know there's not going to be one easy answer to this one either, but they had somebody who was helping them or they were doing it internally. What is the reason that they go, okay, I've had enough. I'm calling Kendra back. We're going to make this move. What is that last straw that makes them make that phone call?
You know what? There can be a last straw, like you had a fatality or an issue, right? You had a security breach or you had a load stolen, right? There could be a last straw. I would argue, though, that most of the time, it's just the complexity of everything day to day. We don't have it now, but when you had the driver shortage, the companies that were outsourcing transportation, just because they couldn't manage getting a driver, it was so painful and so difficult, right? You talked about it earlier, the cost of equipment, the cost of insurance. We have these nuclear verdicts when it comes to lawsuits, there's so many more complications in what we do across all the service offerings that I think what happens is companies start to say, hey, this is not where I want to be an expert, right? I'm an expert at making my product and let me look for a partner who is an expert in this. And then when you add on top of that, what we've been talking about today, but because Ryder's an expert in supply chain logistics, we are investing in that technology and we know how to use that technology. We know how to deploy that technology. That's an added benefit. Again, a shipper out there in the retail space doesn't want to or need to know all those things. They can go partner with a company like Ryder and get that. So that, I'll be honest, I don't know that it's like the one thing unless it's something really bad. It's usually just the burden of the whole at this point.
Yep. Originally an automotive guy. And when I came to logistics, I had a mindset about how business was done. And it was automotive doesn't have any transactional partners. So if you look at who Ford, General Motors, Nissan, Toyota, they have these partners that are in their house. They're joined at the hip. You go to a facility, it's hard to tell who's who at the company. And those are much harder to win that business. And the implementations are harder. Everything's harder, but the value is so much greater.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big believer that shippers, not just supply chains, but shippers a lot of times have this mindset that I want that $50 cheaper. So I'm not going to work with that guy because he's, and I keep thinking, you're missing the point. Don't look at saving $50 on tomorrow's load. Think about saving 10% and having improved service over the course of a year. And big companies think that way.
You're bringing up a really interesting point, though. We had a cycle, I'm going to call it 5 years ago. I might be off by a year or two, where I think procurement was the main decision maker in outsourcing any sort of supply chain or logistics activity. And it was very transactional, right? Not relationship-based, not necessarily value-based. I've really seen a shift recently where our customers are in our new opportunities. They are looking for that partner. They really are in the way that you're describing it. And it has me so excited because when you're looking, when you're a shipper out there and you're looking for a 3PL or 4PL who can be your partner, who can come to you with holistic solutions and value add solutions that drive efficiency in your supply chain and aren't just the lowest cost at the most acceptable on-time delivery rate, right? When you're really looking for a strategic partner, it's a different type of relationship. That's an exciting relationship where we can have an impact on your business, a really material impact on your business. And so I've been seeing that shift and I really hope it continues and it stays because that will be powerful for all of us.
It reminds me, years ago, I was helping a very large shipper select 3PLs. We looked at a whole bunch of them. And I remember he said, oh, well, I don't know why we need that guy, that systems engineer and that guy. We're being billed for each one of those. And I said, I think you're looking at this wrong. You're looking at that guy and saying that guy makes 150, 200 grand a year. I want you to look at that guy that he's going to save me $1 million. He's going to improve my service. And I said, it's not just headcount. And again, there's a big difference between the value and the service and that price. And again, if you get into that price mode, that's, I don't want to victim blame here, shippers, but some of the freight fraud is because we've been ridiculous about going to the lowest price. I say, I've been working with Kendra for years and she's fantastic and she knows my business like the back of her hand. And yet I'm going to someone else because they're 5% cheaper. Don't be surprised if you get in trouble.
No, I think it's a great point. It's a great point. And now more than ever, with all of the fraud and everything happening out there, it really should be a very tight partnership.
Yep. I'm going to wrap this bad boy up. I'm going to summarize the best that I can. And then okay. I want you to put a big bow on this one, Kendra Phillips. So we're talking with Kendra and we're talking about taming the supply chain beast, tech solutions for smoother operations. We covered a lot of ground here. We talked about all of the technologies that are out there and some of the newer technologies that we're not quite sure about yet, but we know they're coming.
They're coming.
We talked about how, yeah, for sure. And then how do you implement all those new technologies? Because there's always a new implementation and you're always wanting to get an extra 5% out of the existing technologies and upgrading the new ones. And then perhaps one of the more important points is, how do you judge all of this emerging tech? How do you keep ahead of the curve without putting anybody at risk? And then we talked a little bit about who you guys work with and how you work, which is at the very strategic level with big companies. And I think you've alluded to it. We are not dating. We are not engaged. We are married to those customers. So vet those customers. Vet the partners that you're picking. Put a big bow on this one, Kendra Phillips.
Absolutely. I think in our industry, like you said, we need to be looking at this through the lens of partnerships. And as shippers out there are looking for who their right partners are in today's world, those companies need to be investing heavily in tech. They need to be investing heavily in new tech, looking at startups, and have surefire ways of implementing that and bringing that stability and that opportunity to the shippers. So it's an exciting time in logistics. It's a really neat time to be in this industry, with all the opportunity coming at us and leveraging tech to really attack that opportunity and to de-risk some of what we have in front of us. So it's been a great conversation, Joe. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Before I forget, I know you guys will be at all the conferences. You can't go to a conference without seeing the Ryder folks, but I will also put a link to your LinkedIn profile, a link to your website, and any other links you and your marketing team give me. Also, I will make sure we put the latest market report out that you guys do with FreightWaves every single month.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
And thank all of you for listening to my podcast. Your support's very much appreciated. Until next time, onward and upward.
You have been listening to the Logistics of Logistics podcast, where we engage with leaders in the logistics and supply chain community. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, hit the like button, and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen. Also, please check out our videos on YouTube and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're very big on LinkedIn. And you can also reach us on the logisticsoflogistics.com, our website.